Today's podcast is sponsored by RadRx, your source for quality online education for interventional and diagnostic radiology coding, taught by subject matter expert Stacy Buck. For more information and testimonials, visit RadRx.com. Struggling to learn interventional radiology coding? If so, RadRx has the perfect solution for you. Cracking the IR Code, Mastering Interventional Radiology and Cardiology online training program. In this program, interventional radiology coding expert Stacy Buck breaks down the complexities of interventional radiology coding in easy-to-understand terms so you can grasp this complex specialty. Through her course, Stacy has assisted many coders with little or no interventional radiology coding experience in successfully passing the CIRC exam on the first attempt. For additional information and testimonials, visit RadRx.com. Welcome to Who Cares What Stacy Says, a podcast providing insights and advice on how to take your medical coding career to the next level. And now, here's your host, Stacy Buck.
Welcome to Who Cares What Stacy Says. I am your host, Stacy Buck. In today's episode, Rosemean Bappett, president of CodeRight Healthcare Consulting, and Tony Elholmes, CEO of Alpha Coding Experts, are back so we can continue our discussion on Dr. Marty McCary's book, The Price We Pay, What Broke American Healthcare, and How to Fix It. This book is a must-read for everyone, but in particular, it is a must-read for anyone working in the healthcare industry. Dr. McCary shines a light on business practices within healthcare that drive up costs for all of us. He takes a deep dive into the many reasons why healthcare costs are so high, and he also showcases individuals who are disrupting the status quo of healthcare delivery. Rosemean, Tony, and I continue to discuss what we learned from Dr. McCary's book and share insights based on our own personal experiences, both as patients and as healthcare professionals. And now here is part two of my interview with Rosemean and Tony. I do want to bring up another point from the book, and that was the chapter about buying health insurance, where Dr. McCary talked about brokers, insurance brokers, and how the insurance brokers get paid kickbacks by the insurance companies. They're earning commissions, they're getting paid kickbacks. So an employer will hire, you know, or have a broker who will supposedly shop for insurance plans for them or come to them and give them options. Well, the brokers in many cases are not going to the employers with multiple options or showing them the options that are in their best interest or are the most cost effective. They are selling them on those plans where they are going to get the biggest kickbacks and they are going to get the biggest commissions. So if you're an employer out there who's using a broker, you may want to rethink about who you're using for a broker, because they don't show you all the options that are out there. And we all use insurance brokers for different things. Like when I was, you know, looking for homeowners insurance, I go to a broker and I have the broker shop homeowners insurance. It started making me question all brokers. It honestly did when I read that chapter. I'm like, are they doing this in other industries? I feel like my homeowners insurance broker has always done a pretty good job for me, but we use brokers to purchase a lot of different insurance products, but employers are relying on them to come with these recommendations and give them options. And they're clearly not presenting them with the options. And what I found most interesting about this is that in many cases, and I knew about being self-insured, I heard about it, some employers opt to be self-insured, and I kind of always poo-pooed the self-insured like idea, and I wasn't really like a big fan of it. But reading this chapter about how health insurance is sold to employers, and then also just seeing how health insurance costs now have gone up so much over the years, there's no relief in sight for premiums. What you see with healthcare is that each year premiums go up, deductibles go up, copays go up. So there's always more out of pocket for the patient and there's no end in sight to that. And then of course, employers are paying more for health insurance. That's something that I know is a huge, you know, issue. You know, myself, I'm a small company. I don't have any full-time employees who work for me. I only have 1099s. I don't need to worry about that. I just need to worry about me. I personally don't have traditional health insurance. I have a cost share plan. I'm with Liberty Health Share. That works for me. Interestingly, last year, Liberty redid its plans and they restructured them. And my monthly cost went down from $399 to $239 a month. Would that ever happen with traditional insurance? No, it would not. I digress. That's like a side topic here. But, you know, so there's other options out there besides traditional, which I feel, again, can give competition to these insurers. Now, my rates have gone up with Liberty for several years. They started out lower and they went up higher, but then when they restructured them, they dropped them. Everything's gone up in price in the past 6 months, people. My health insurance, it's not insurance technically, but my health went down. That's the only thing that went down significantly. Everything else is like up. But anyway, I like the idea now with health insurance premiums the way they are and seeing that brokers aren't working in the best interest of employers. I am now a fan of self-insured for employers. And there is an example in the book that I can recall where the one employer was saving hundreds of thousands of dollars a year moving from traditional health insurance over into self-insured. And what they do, because I always thought about the risk of self-insured. I didn't realize until I read this book that you have those, that you can purchase the stop loss coverage for those catastrophic situations that occur. Let's say if you have an employee in a small business that gets really sick and has millions of dollars of, you know, medical bills, there's a means to cover that through an insurance policy, this catastrophic type policy that you have in addition to your self-insurance. So basically how self-insurance works is you're taking money and you're putting it into a fund to pay for your employees' healthcare costs. And then you're actually paying for the medical bills and you have a third party administrator who actually handles the submission of claims and whatnot. And I would love to see more businesses shift to this type of model, because then they are fully in control of their healthcare costs versus being at the mercy of these brokers, which I think it's disgusting when reading some of the information about the brokers. But again, there are good people out there who have taken themselves out of, there's one gentleman in particular who talked about all the money he used to make, you know, McCary had met with him and now he has shifted into being a broker and being the honest broker where he can like live, go to bed at night and like sleep, you know, comfortably. He's still making money. So I found that, you know, very interesting that there are other companies out there that are now operating on the more honest side of the business. And then again, we wonder why insurance costs go up. This is part of the reason. If they're paying the brokers this ridiculous amount of money for the, it's like this cycle that we need to find some major, there are many pieces or many stops in that cycle, I guess, when you're going around that circle and you need to start yanking one out and then go for the next one, like take the biggest, you know, piece out and then go for the other one and break it down. So I found that very interesting. So do either of you want to comment on the health insurance brokers and purchasing health insurance? I mean, we're all small business owners. So what are your thoughts on insurance for yourself or people who work for you?
So for me personally, I am covered through my husband. He has a full-time job and he works for a healthcare system. So I'm covered through him. And the way that, and I was not offering health insurance because I've done the research and everything. And it was very costly for me. Yes. And technically, you know, I don't have to offer right. health insurance because I don't have like, you know, more than 25 employees or anything like that. But there were some employees who were actually looking at me for some help. So I researched a HRA program. And it's you contribute to their out of pocket, you know, a sum, monthly sum, and then they actually go out and they get their own insurance. So they go out and they do their research and everything, and they price it on healthcare.gov, and then they get whatever they need, however much coverage they need. A couple of my employees are young, they're very healthy, they take care of themselves and everything, so they don't need much. So their premium is like $70-$80 a month. And that I have to pay that. And then whatever I have a copay or whatever, if they go see the doctor. So that is working out for me. That way I can keep those employees and right. not lose them. Right. And then of course, and not break the bank here as well. I think for things to change drastically, Stacey, what needs to happen is the large corporations have to take that step. you know, it's these large corporations that are offering, like Blue Cross and United and Cigna, Aetna, all of these kinds of insurances, like a corporation like Amazon or, you know, a GMC or whatever, you know, they have, you know, thousands and thousands of employees. If they can take that first step and go to that self-funded insurance model, then, because smaller companies are even like 500 employees, or they're not going to be able to do that just yet. It's going to have to be the big corporations, the giants, that have to take that first step for the others to follow. So that's what I feel.
Yeah. So you have a nice option. So that's not self-funded technically. It's kind of like another variation. Like I would think to myself, like, okay, if I had full-time employees, what would I do for them if they didn't have insurance? Because some will have insurance coverage through a spouse, you know, like you do. But I would probably say, hey, you know what? There are these affordable cost share plans on Liberty. I will give you this amount of money per month, and then you use it for this premium for Liberty. So you're paying, if you're younger, you're going to pay less. They do it based on your age determines your cost. And then also like what tier of coverage, like what percentage they're paying and what your deductible, they don't call it a deductible. What do they call it? The annual something. They call it your AUA. It's not a deductible because it's not insurance. I mean, technically it's not insurance, but it works like insurance. When I go to the physician, they could submit the claim directly to Liberty. Liberty can pay them directly, but technically it's not insurance, but it works like that. So I, as an employer, would be fine with funding something like that for employees if they didn't need anything. So that's an alternative. So Tony, do you have anything you'd like to add?
I think Dr. McCary said it best. He basically said health insurance has become destructive for the consumer. So it has, you're getting gouged and fleeced. So it's just unfortunate. So I have three kids, all under the age of five. So I have paid tens of thousands of dollars over the last 5 years to have these children. And I had insurance. That's the sad thing. Yeah. I had insurance. When I was employed, I had insurance. I had great plan. It was incredibly expensive when it was just me. It was, you know, very affordable because I'm young. And I think my premium was like, you know, $250 a month. It was no big deal. And then when I started having kids, that's when things really changed for me. I mean, it was insane. I went from paying, you know, $250 a month with a $2,000 deductible, which is very reasonable, to now having to pay $1,200, $1,400, $1,500 a month for premiums. And then you have to pay your $6,000 deductible per person.
Exactly.
So when I had my daughter, my second child, I was paying my insurance, my son's insurance, my husband's insurance. My daughter was born. And so we had $6,000 deductibles for every single person. So that's $24,000 a year just to have care covered. So that is completely asinine. That is, I mean, it's just unreal the fact that anybody would be expected to pay that kind of money to access your health insurance benefits. So we are creative, like you said, Stacy. We utilize MediShare and Health Shares, mm-hmm. and I will very often shop around for pricing. So I'll call and ask, how much do you charge for this, and what's your cash rate? Because if people don't know this, there's something called high tech, which allows you to bypass your health insurance and get a cash price, and you would be shocked at mm-hmm. the cash price. And a lot of times the cash price is less than your copay, your deductible, yes. all of that yes. stuff. You can bypass that, but they're not going to yes. tell you that.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. We always talk about, you know, the self-pay patient getting hosed and getting overcharged. Like that's what people focus on. And I've been on the receiving end of that. There've been multiple times in my life where I've had no insurance and I've been self-pay, and I get that. But on the flip side, where you have, and now this is, I guess, we'll probably segue into our pricing conversation, which will probably be lengthy here, but there are instances where when you have insurance, it is more, it's going to be more expensive for you to go through your insurance than if you were a self-pay. And I personally had that happen to me, you know, many years ago when I had a ton of health issues and I had to keep going to all these providers for doctor's visits and testing. at that time I had this crappy like indemnity plan that was very limited coverage. It's like, unless something majorly catastrophic happened to you, it basically didn't pay like anything. And I had to get that because it's a long story, but my medical provider had tagged me with a pre-existing condition in my medical record that I didn't have. And then I got denied insurance. And then they're like, well, we can give you guaranteed issue while you're working this out. Long story short, it didn't get worked out. I got really sick and then ended up having to go to see all these providers with this crappy insurance. And so what I saw was the indemnity plan, even though they weren't paying anything for me, they would process the claim with their allowed amount. And then I would get the bill for the allowed amount and I would be paying 100% of it. So there was no benefit to me having the indemnity plan file a claim. For example, I needed several MRIs during that time. Well, the MRI, if I ran the claim through the plan that I had, their allowable was $800 on that MRI, meaning Stacy's going to have to pay $800 for it. Guess what? As a self-pay with no insurance, it was only $400. And because I work in the imaging industry, I knew that self-pay would be cheaper. So when I went to the provider, they asked for my insurance and I said, I don't have any insurance. I am a self-pay. And every time I went to that imaging center, I said, I have no insurance. Now that, you know, things have changed now since then. We're talking 2010. Back then, I didn't really care. I'm like, I have this crappy indemnity plan that isn't paying for anything anyway. So I didn't need to run into the instance of, oh, I did it without insurance and now I got to come back to the insurance for something else. It really didn't matter because I had coverage without having coverage, if that makes any sense whatsoever. But that was, there were a lot of instances where I could say I have no insurance and pay less than if they had processed the claim for me. So it actually works on both sides there. So let's turn then into our discussion about prices and, you know, list prices in healthcare and what's on a bill versus, you know, what's paid. I know that we all have thoughts about that and we all have personal experiences in dealing, you know, with that. So why don't we talk about, I'm trying to think where we want to start. There's so much to unpack in this because I know we wanted to talk about surprise billing as well and tie that you know, all in there. So let me open it up with this. We'll start with this. We'll start with a story from Dr. McCary's book. And this was in chapter 2, where he was talking about Henri, who was visiting from France. And Henri ended up having a heart attack and he needed a bypass. And so Henri was given a quote of $150,000 from the hospital to have his bypass surgery performed. You know, he's from France. He's not insured over here. He's kind of on his own. He needs to pay for this. Well, that was like too much money. So he goes back to the hospital and says $150,000. By the way, it was only $15,000 to have it done in France, but he's not in France. He's here and he needs to have it done. So in discussions with the hospital, they dropped it down from $150,000 to $50,000. See, now they're doing him a big favor, giving him a $100,000 discount. Then he still says no. Then they tell him, okay, we'll do it for $25,000, this bypass operation. And I know this happens, but I'm reading this because the amounts are so ridiculous what they did. I'm like, why is getting a healthcare service like buying a car? Like, this is like what I like kind of like relate it to, where you go back, like, this is the starting bid. Like, we all know to say no to the first number the car sales guy tells us. Although these days, from talking to people in the car industry, you're going to pay over sticker right now. But we're talking pre-inflation and pre-all supply chain issues that we know we never accept the first. Why is it that way in healthcare? Like, I've been doing this for so many years, and that's probably what infuriates me from a patient. I mean, I'm a patient. I've been on the receiving end of it, and I don't like seeing patients being taken advantage of. And so to just kind of wrap up the story here and some other information that McCary shared before I open it up for discussion with you all, he said that there was a study conducted of 101 U.S. hospitals, and only half of them provided the price for a bypass surgery. So there's half. Now they wouldn't be in compliance. They have to provide it. The average cost was $151,000 for a bypass surgery, and the range for on pricing was $44,000 up to $448,000 for bypass surgery. And so you have the situation where you're getting a markup on Medicare of 20, 25, 30 times what Medicare would pay. And so is this service worth any more at from one provider to another? Are they that much better? We all know that's absolutely not true. Nothing makes it worth that much more in that case. And so obviously we, you know, hospitals will say that they're trying to make up the cost of the uninsured people, which I kind of call like BS on that, because it's your uninsured people that are getting hit with these bills in a lot of cases where you play the numbers game. So it's like saying we have to do it and charge more because people are uninsured, but yet we're doing this to uninsured people. I don't know if they say that because they're talking about charity care. And that's one other thing the book touched on briefly too. I'm like, really, how much charity care is given with nonprofits? I see Tony like shaking her head because there was a discussion of nonprofits. So that's, and I've done a lot of work in this space with, you know, Chargemaster and audit. So I can share some personal stories myself about how I've seen this system completely messed up and makes no sense. But Tony, I'm going to jump over to you first because you were just sitting there shaking your head. And I know you had a bullet pointed list that you wanted to talk about, and so much of your list revolved around this topic.
It's a passion of mine. It's definitely a passion topic. So this idea, the inflation versus discount game. So we've got the sticker price, right? The hospital's charging $100,000, but then you compare that hospital to other hospitals in the same area. And when one hospital is charging $100,000, another one's charging $20,000, another one's charging $5,000. And it's just like this crazy scale and spectrum of inflated medical prices. So this has such an impact on society at large, because I mean, that's the whole premise of this book, the price we pay. We all pay for these inflated prices. And I love that he, you know, really hammers, Dr. McCary hammers this in the book. We all pay this price because it inflates the cost of healthcare. We're talking about a $3 trillion industry. $3 trillion. Like, that's an insane amount of money. So nobody pays the sticker price. That's not true. People that don't have insurance, that don't qualify for charity care, are paying the full price. And guess what? If you don't pay the full price, they're going to sue you for everything that you have. They're going to take your house. They're going to take your 401k, your assets. They're going to clean you out. And so this kind of price gouging, I mean, this healthcare is the only industry that you can get away with this, which is crazy, right? Like, you have to sign all of these, you know, paperwork when you do a mortgage, when you buy anything that's over a certain value, right? And it's highly regulated. But healthcare, you can walk in the door and walk out with a $100,000 bill, and you're supposed to be okay with it. You're supposed to figure out how to pay for it. And it's like, nobody has that kind of disposable income. And it inflates the hospital's cost reports, because the cost that they're reflecting is not accurate of the services that they're providing. Correct. Right. Mm-hmm. When you're charging $500 for a tablet of Tylenol, like, are you kidding me? This is just asinine in every level. No other market allows for these types of predatory.
Well, you don't shop for anything else like that. Is there anything else that we would go in and we would consume the good and then be like, okay, how much are you going to charge me? Let me know how much you're going to charge me today. Nothing else works like that. That is, it's insane. And that is healthcare, you know, mostly. And, you know, in some instances you can't know, you know, emergency care, trauma, things like that. Obviously there are exceptions where there is no shopping. It is what it is. They do what they need to do. But I think in the book, he said that when it comes to healthcare services, about 60% of services are fully shoppable, and there's no reason why consumers can't shop and, you know, look around, you know, for them. And I feel like it's almost like the insurance companies, they're, again, they have like a hand in this, and this like whole messed up like way of like reimbursing providers. So I'll share this kind of weird story. I don't know if I've shared this on a podcast episode before or not, but in one of my jobs that I worked at, because this ties into the whole, you know, not necessarily pricing so much, but how somebody's reimbursed, going back to sticker price or list price. So I used to have to do like audits of hospital bills. We're talking itemized hospital bills, like taking a $100,000 bill and like counting every widget that was used on the patient and every pill and all that. It's very tedious and boring. And it's awful. And some of these audits that I, these charge audits that I did were what were called stop loss audits. That's how they referred to them. And so what I had to do on a daily basis was take a look at the census and then look at the charges, the current charges for each patient that was in the hospital. And then I was looking for a certain threshold. I think the number was like $70,000 for cardiac patients, for example. So if you have a cardiac patient and if they're around, if they're just shy of the $70,000 mark, I need to do an audit of the record and bump the charges to over $70,000. The reason being is how they're reimbursed. There's a set amount, as you know, there's a set amount for a patient. I mean, not every insurance company works on a Medicare DRG concept, but there's something similar there for certain conditions. They have a certain amount that they pay. So let's say in this instance, for this patient, for the time that they're in the hospital, what they've had done, let's just say for argument's sake, to keep it simple, that it was $35,000 is what the company would pay. That's kind of like their threshold. But there was this thing in the contract where once you reached a threshold of $70,000, no, I'm sorry, they would reimburse a $15,000. I'm getting ahead of myself here. They would reimburse around $15,000, let's say. But once you hit a threshold of $70,000 in charges, now they would pay you 50% of charges. So you went from getting $15,000 for that patient's hospital stay up to $35,000 because now you're getting 50% of charges at $70,000. I'm like, by adding 10 more dollars to this bill, I'm exaggerating this, but if I'm $10 under the threshold, you're only going to pay me 15, but by adding $10 to that bill, you're now going to pay me $35,000 on this bill. Again, we've played the numbers game and we're, the charges are inflated. We're not going to get what we charge for the insurance company, but why is this service now worth an additional $20,000 by pushing that over? So it was a game. So I would go in, I would do the, sometimes the bill would come down. We're not doing, you know, it's a straight audit. If something needs to come off the bill, we take it off the bill. We're not only looking for things that we've missed. You push it over that threshold and then you would get paid 50% of charges. Then the insurance company would want to come in and do their audit. And then they would send their auditor to go and do the charge audit. And then you're sitting there going back and forth, arguing, you know, what you should allow, what you shouldn't. Well, I didn't find this and I found it. And it's a game. But that was eye-opening to me in that job because I had never in my life heard of such a thing. And I could not wrap my brain around, again, like I said, I'm exaggerating it, but by making that bill $10 higher, I've now gotten the facility an additional $20,000 for the same services, which makes zero sense. Whether or not contracts are still written that way now, I don't know. We're talking 20 years ago. There's probably a certain degree of that still going on, I would imagine. The way contracts are written, but I just found that to be like really, really bizarre. So Rosmeen, you've been quiet for a little bit. So I'm going to let you chime in on this topic now.
I'm just absorbing all this knowledge you guys are sharing. I've never really worked in the hospital sector, so I'm not very well versed there, but I do know that when you mentioned that it's a game, Stacey, I think Dr. McCary actually mentions that in the book as well, that it's all a game and the hospital executives and the insurance company and everything, everybody is part of this game. You know, it's like who can, you know, get more from the other. It's like that. One thing that I do know, and I don't know if that this is a fact or you guys can correct me if I'm wrong, but the charity patients that the hospital deals with or treats, they're actually getting incentives from the government because they qualify as a not-for-profit hospital. So whatever charity patients that they're seeing, they're getting that money somehow from, they're claiming it to the government and they're getting that money. So it's not that hospital is losing anything. If they are giving this patient like $100,000 worth of treatment, which of course it's not $100,000, you know, when you think about it, they are recovering it from, they're probably, you know, putting a markup on it and they're recovering that $100,000 from the government, even though that service was not worth $100,000. So that's what I think. I think it's all a game. And as patients, I feel we're kind of pawns in the game here. You know, we're the ones who are paying the price. We're the ones who are being taken advantage of. The hospital systems, the the payers, they're all kind of in this, and they're all these big players. That's why when I talked earlier, I said that there has to be another giant that has to come in and disrupt this. You know, we can talk all about it. There's a lot of doctors who are raising their voices on LinkedIn, on different platforms. I feel like everybody's in kind of in their silos, right? And right. We need to have some sort of a collective voice and a face that, you know, like Mark Cuban would be a great ambassador for this. And he is trying in his own way. So like these billionaires who can kind of come together and disrupt this market, that's when things are going to change. As Tony also mentioned that, you know, as long as the fee for service model is there, you know, the system is going to get abused. You know, we have to find these alternative payment models, but that also will take some time. There's going to be so many steps that are going to have to be taken to get to this point. Doctors are being incentivized for doing the procedures, right? That's why primary care is kind of fading away, because
service incentivizes volume of service.
Exactly. And if we go back to the book, there was another story about an ENT who was doing these balloon procedures.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Right. And then I guess the doctor himself talked to Dr. McCary, and he said, how effective are they? And he said, like, less than 10%. It's like, why are you doing it? Because this procedure is paying him like $1,200, you know, and he's doing like, you know, 10 of them in a day. It's $12,000 right there. So it's all part of the game. Everybody's and at the end of the day, we're the patients who end up paying. And Tony, as you mentioned, you know, having those deductibles, you know, having these children, you had to pay so much. Yeah, you had health insurance, but did they even pay anything? Yeah, they renegotiated the price or whatever and told you this is your deductible. And I will tell you this, that the only year that we met our deductible was when I had my daughter. That's it. We've never met a deductible.
That is the game that they play, how they set the deductibles. It has nothing to do with cost. I'm convinced of it. They look at the threshold. Where do most people fall out in what they're spending and how much healthcare they're receiving? Most people, you know, spend under this threshold. This is where we're going to set the deductible. I'm convinced they do that. I feel they do the same thing. Like, Tony, you can relate to this being in Florida and homeowners insurance with hurricane deductibles. With hurricane deductibles over the years, those have like gone up, particularly after we had a lot of, well, Tony didn't live here those years when it was awful. She wasn't in Florida yet. But you have this creep with like hurricane deductibles going up. And what I noticed is when you look at the hurricane deductible, the threshold, I think it was like around $5,000 last time I looked at it. I'm like, where do they pick that number from? They look at the cost of repairs that everybody's doing. And if most households fall under 5,000, that's probably where we're getting that number from for the hurricane deductible, because they don't want to pay out. And I feel like that's what they do with health insurance. They set that threshold so high, knowing that most of their subscribers are not going to meet that minimum. They're not going to hit that deductible. If you're a healthy person, you're not never going to hit that deductible if you're healthy. And I think that's how they're able to get those bigger profits, because they set the deductible so high. So the healthy people are paying for all their, so they're only collecting money from the healthy people. They're not doing anything for them. And then when they do have those cases, the really sick people, it's like all that money kind of fills that gap, because there's so many people that they're not paying any money for. But with what amazes me in like healthcare is why can anyone not figure out what the actual cost of providing a service like is? That is like the big mystery. And in the book, McCary talked about that. He had the one guy that worked with him who's like the mathematical genius or whatever. The guy had multiple degrees and just, you know, he was just that lifelong learning person. And he's like, even he couldn't figure out, you know, some of this stuff when he was looking at it. Because with other products, we know this is the cost of the product. Then you have your cost. Then you have your markup, which is your profit. In healthcare, it has never been based on cost. I can remember starting out in healthcare in the 90s. And back then, when you were in the hospital and you're setting charge master prices, the standard was to whatever Medicare reimburses. Now, this was years ago when Medicare reimbursements were high. They have declined, you know, many, many years later. They kept cutting Medicare reimbursements. again, I'm like, why are we cutting Medicare reimbursements or the cost of these things going down? Like, that doesn't make sense to me either. They're playing a shell game with Medicare. That's a whole nother discussion of moving money around the Medicare program, which is problematic there. But back then it was standard to take the Medicare allowed amount for a hospital charge master and whatever that charge was, mark it up 3 to 5 times. And that was your list price. Well, that doesn't happen anymore. The Medicare rates are so low. You are barely making anything, you know, at 3 to 5 times. So you're looking at 20, 25, 30 times in some cases, like of Medicare. But again, whether it's the 3 times or the 5 times or the 20 times or the 30 times, it is completely arbitrary. There is no basis in actual cost of providing the service. And that's really where we fall short. And I understand the complexity of doing it in the hospital setting because of the overhead, but there has to be a better way to quantify that. I can even talk about the flaws of the RVU system and how that doesn't work and conversion factors. Don't even get me started on all that. And how that's not really, I feel like Medicare is probably not paying enough in a lot of situations. You know, if we want to get into Medicare reimbursement, but then we're still using that number and we're throwing a multiple on it, which to me just doesn't, you know, make any sense there. And so I know that both of you have your experience. I've worked with the hospital side and I work the physician side. And I would say I probably work with more hospitals than I do physician practices just because of my background. So I'd like to hear from both of you in working out in the physician world about pricing and issues that you've seen on the physician side, on that pro fee side, if you want to share from that perspective. So Tony, I will start with you.
Yeah, so I mean, I think that in terms of physicians and their pricing model, so I do a lot of work with physicians on establishing a fee schedule methodology, right? And as everybody knows, Medicare is kind of the basis for what that methodology is going to be, right? Are we going to multiply it by 4, multiply it by 5? And then when you negotiate with insurance companies, let's say you're going to go to BUCA, right? BUCA is Blue Cross, United, Cigna, Aetna, Humana, for anybody that doesn't know. And you're going to ask for a specific rate. Those rates are typically going to be based on a percentage of Medicare, right? We're looking at 130% of what Medicare pays. So a lot of times the back and forth and the overhead associated with collecting from insurance companies often offsets the cost of what it would be if somebody just paid you directly, right? Like,
right.
It doesn't make sense. You're paying 3 FTEs to go out and, you know, hunt down your money, but you're only getting 30% higher than Medicare rates. So like, what kind of sense does that make? So I think, you know, just from that perspective, a lot of physicians are starting to embrace this direct patient care model, right? Or a concierge mm-hmm. model where yeah. they're doing hybrid systems where they charge a membership fee. So like, let's say $2,000 a year and you get access to your provider 24/7. You get telehealth visits, you get emails, text messages, you can reach out to them and they have a menu of services that are going to be a part of this $2,000 per month. And then for things that are covered under your insurance, you can utilize your insurance. I think those models, we're going to see more and more of those models. I also think direct primary care is also going to be another thing. So like everybody on this, you know, on this call, me, you and Rosemean have all said like, we never hit our deductibles. Like
yeah.
the only time I've hit my deductibles is when I've had kids. So paying out of pocket for these services, I think, is going to become the mainstream, the norm. There has been traditionally a lot of fear mongering around, oh, you don't have insurance. What are you going to do? And it's like, well, even if you have insurance, you're sometimes left high and dry, right? if you happen to go to a hospital or see a provider that's out of network and you have no out of network benefits, you're on the hook. Your insurance is worth nothing. So there's also a lot of people that stay in jobs that they absolutely hate because they're terrified of losing their health insurance.
Yes.
Right. Like, this yeah. is crazy. So I think we're going to see more disruption in this, the landscape that we've lived in for so long. And I hope so, because private practice physicians are unfortunately the ones that have these conversations with the patients and kind of get into these discussions of, oh, well, you have to pay your deductible. And before you meet your deductible, your insurance company is not going to pay us. So we have to collect up front. It's deductible season, right? It's February.
Right.
Nobody wants to have those conversations. And when it should be the insurance company having these conversations with the patient, guess what? It's the physician, because if they don't collect that money, they're not going to be able to make payroll. They're not going to be able to support their operation. So it's just so disheartening to see how broken the system is. And I know, because I've been in you know, those shoes where people are coming at me and they're fear-mongering, right? Like, you don't have insurance. What are you going to do? How are you going to pay for it? And that needs to stop, because there are alternative ways to get care. Like, we both, Stacey and I have both said, we use, you know, MediShares, health shares. You put money aside, you ask for the cash rate, the discounted rate, the time of service discount. Don't just pay a bill, you know, off the sticker price. And there's a lot of people that don't know any better. And so until there's a checks and balances system, right, these things have been left unchecked, and it's going to continue until we see massive disruption. So stop using your insurance. Stop buying insurance. Like, let's protest insurance.
That definitely, no, that's like a novel idea. It's like, but myself, I've been without insurance so many times. Unfortunately, when I got stuck without it was when I really needed it, which was unfortunate. And I ended up with tens of thousands of dollars of bills that I had to pay for out of my own pocket. So again, even though I had that crazy plan that didn't cover anything, I really was, for all purposes, this self-pay patient. And what I feel bad for the average healthcare consumer who does not do what we do. They don't have the knowledge that we have. They don't know any better. I try to educate my friends, my family, my neighbors, like people that I can, about medical bills. And I tell them, I'm like, everything is negotiable. I'm like, if you don't have insurance, I'm like, everything is negotiable. And people find that shocking, that healthcare would be negotiable. I said, if you're a self, and I said, here's the thing. I go, the game with like self-pay patients is they act like they're doing you a favor when they're giving you a discount to a self-pay patient. Now, the example I just shared a little while ago is a little bit different. Insurance, it would have been more expensive for the MRI versus doing self-pay. Those instances do exist. But here's an example. And so I'll use this as like a personal, well, it isn't my personal example, but my father, not too long ago, had to get a CT of the abdomen performed, and he went to a standalone imaging center that he's been to in the past that used to be owned by another entity, and they were bought out by a hospital system. And he goes for this CT. He's on Medicare. So he goes for the CT of his abdomen, and you get the Medicare summary notice and you get the bill and all that. And I, you know, my mom sends me the bill, and she's like, look at the price on this bill. She's like, it was 15,000, whatever, for the CT scan. And she's like, what is with this? And I said, well, you see what Medicare allowed, and then the amount that you need to pay and the amount Medicare paid. So it was like less than $400, I think, in total for the whole thing. So their list price is over $15,000 for the CT of the abdomen, where Medicare pays under $400 for this particular exam. And I can remember I posted this on Facebook to make a point when it came in, to kind of talk about this issue. And there was a podiatrist who jumped on me and said, I didn't know anything about coding and billing. I didn't understand it, because no one pays that $15,000. No one pays that list price. He's like, Medicare, it shows Medicare bill. And I'm like, you're missing my point of what I was trying to say. In this case, yes, Medicare paid that, got written off. But when you have that list price of $15,000, they have the ability, if they want to, they can go after you for the full $15,000. Now, does that happen in most cases? No, but this is what they'll do. And this is what happened to me with a hospital bill, emergency room bill, same concept. Years ago, when I was, you know, I'll call myself uninsured because what I had did me no good. I got the emergency room bill for like $12,000 or $13,000. And I called the hospital and I'm like, look, I need to make arrangements with you to pay this bill. This is the situation. Don't have insurance. So they say to me, oh, this is what we can do, because you're a self-pay. We'll discount the bill 50%. So, okay, let's say it was 12,000. They're going to mark it down from 12 to 6 for me. In this case, on the CT, we're going to go from 15,000 to 7,500. And then the hospital said, we have a credit plan you can sign up for, and then you can make like monthly payments when you get approved for this. Okay, fine. Now, to the average person, that sounds like, oh my gosh, they saved me, you know, $6,000. They're so amazing. No, because if I had had a standard insurance plan, let's say a UHC or something like that, they might have gotten paid $1,500 for my ER visit, and yet they're charging me $6,000 as that self-pay. So I feel that hospitals definitely are making up differences on their self-pay patients. Now, the imaging centers and places like that, you can do better when you're not insured. But when we're talking about hospitals, I have never found a situation where a hospital patient is better off as a self-pay versus being insured and then having to pay whatever the insurance company allows there. So that was my experience, and I've experienced it multiple times, and I always go back and I ask for discounts. The other thing, I'm going to throw this in as like a side like issue, it's not related to charging, but even like dealing with incorrect bills, where how do patients deal with that? Like when there's a bill in error, like what do you do? Like sometimes they know and they don't know how to navigate that. And that's a challenge for those of us even in the profession, particularly during the time frame when I had no insurance. Because I tell patients, if there's an issue that needs to be pressed, you go to your insurance company and you talk to the insurance company and you have them go after the provider about something. If there's overbilling, if there's a discrepancy, if it's truly there. And then the insurance company, if they feel that they paid money they shouldn't, then they can work it out with the provider. I've seen that happen successfully. When they get involved, then the tune has changed. But what do you do in a situation where you're left to your own devices, where you get a bill that's incorrect? So personally, what happened to me was I went to the ER and they billed me a level 5 ER visit. The emergency physician did. The hospital was a level 3 and the ER physician billed a level 5. And when I saw that bill, I'm like, are you kidding me? Do you understand what a level 5 visit is? You put me in a bed, you drew blood, and you took a chest x-ray, and that's all you did for me. You didn't do anything else. And then I left the hospital a few hours later. Granted, I left AMA because you were pissing me off and you weren't doing anything for me. And so I'm like, I'm out of here. I'm like not staying. And I left the ER. Well, they had given me as a final diagnosis, because I had to put something on there, anxiety, that I had an anxiety attack. This is how they diagnosed me. And they bill me a level 5 ER visit. So I go to the emergency physician, you know, I do an audit of my record, my bill, like we all do when we have these problems, and argue my case why this could never be a level 5. And I send it in because they're charging me $1,200, mind you, this bill from the ED physician, and I've got to pay it myself. I'm self-pay. And I was like, this is insane. Their auditor looks at it and their auditor says, we stand by our level 5 because all the boxes in the EHR had been checked that calculated a level 5. And at that point, I'm like, this is insane. And so I'm trying to argue it. And they say, well, we're not going to change the level, but this is what we'll do for you. We'll reduce the price from $1,200 down to $600, and then you can make payments on that. And I'm thinking, well, if you had charged me appropriately, my bill should probably be closer to $250 or $300, really, which ticked me off, but they wouldn't do anything for me. And I'm like, I don't have an insurer to come in and be the strong arm on this, so I'm stuck on my own. So I said, fine. So to be difficult, I sent them $5 a month on that bill just because. And I'm like, there you go. Have a nice day. Because they said, pay whatever you want. They didn't require a minimum. And then eventually they ended up writing off the balance anyway. I don't think I ever finished paying them. It was so insane. But that's the insanity of the healthcare system. And again, we know how to navigate it. And I still had to deal with frustrations and negotiations. And you guys have as well. And these high costs, you know, that we're dealing with, which I get so frustrated thinking, it makes me angry sitting here thinking about it. I'm like, I want to be careful about what I say. Because Tony, you know how I get when I get on my soapbox.
I know.
Well, something.
So I actually just had this happen to me recently because I had the baby, right? And they had all of this stuff on my bill where they were charging for the nursery. Mm-hmm. And the hospital that I delivered at doesn't take the baby. They're baby friendly. So they don't take the baby away. You keep the baby, right? So you have the baby and you're stuck with the baby. Unless the baby's going to the NICU, you're it. So I had like, I don't know, it was close to, I think it was like $9,000 worth of nursery charges on the bill. So I called them and I said, you guys are billing me for nursery services, but my daughter never went to the nursery. She was with me the whole time. And they said, oh no, your daughter went to the nursery. You must have been asleep. And I said, I said, I would like I would like a copy of all of my hospital records and all of the nurses' notes that show time in, time out, and all of that. So I ended up getting that and, like you said, audited my entire chart and file and went back and ended up getting the charges adjusted. But like the hoops that I had to go through to get those charges off is just like, it's asinine. And the average person is not going to know that they can do that. And they're not going to waste their time doing it. So the hospital plays this like gotcha game, right? Like gotcha.
Well, the problem is nobody can read an itemized bill. Well, first of all, you don't always get an itemized bill. You just get a total. You got to ask for itemized and people don't necessarily know that. Then you get the itemized bill and then you don't understand the descriptions on the itemized bill. And like, this is kind of funny. So this reminds me like years ago when I used to work as the auditor in the facility, in addition to doing this ridiculous insurance defense audits and stop loss things, if patients had a complaint about their bill, they would get transferred to me and then I would do an audit of their bill. And there was a woman who had come in the middle of the night, emergency appendectomy. So they had to call the physician in to come do this. It was something that could not, you know, wait in this particular situation. And so on the bill, the one line item, she didn't have insurance either. That's why she's calling me to complain about her $15,000 bill for emergency appendectomy. The one line said emergency callback fee. And so we know that that's like for the physician to come in after hours. That's, you know, we would read that and we would know what that represents. Right or wrong, we know what it means, right? Like when we look at the bill. So she's yelling at me on the phone and she's talking about how the last time I checked a phone call was only 25 cents. This is back when we had pay phones. And I'm like, but that just shows you that the patients have no understanding of what those charge descriptions mean. I had to explain to her what it meant. And anyway, long story short, what happened in that situation, she was a very upset self-pay patient and I audited. And I would always tell people, if I audit your bill, your charges can go up. I would tell them that we look for overs and unders. So you're going to sign off. This is a risk you can take. And I did audit her and she came out about the same. And then I went to the CFO and I'm like, what do we want to do in this situation? And he said, well, let me look up what an HMO would pay us. And so he looks it up and he's like, I would get about $1,500. He's like, reduce her bill down to $1,500. And so he did bring it down to that. But again, had she not called, had she not asked for the audit, had she not gone through that process, she'd be getting that bill for $15,000. So how many people pay it or where they don't need to? How many people ignore it and then get sent to collections? Like, I feel like as a coding professional, one thing I've always wanted to do separately, and I still may do this one day, is step out and have a business like separate to do like patient advocacy and help patients like navigate all of this. Even HIPAA and understanding HIPAA and what their rights are and what they have access to and what they don't. My doctor's offices, a lot of them hate me because I know this stuff better than they do. And when they tell me things that they can't do for me and can't give me, I tell them that they're just flat out wrong. And again, the average person does not know that. So I'm going to let Rosmeen, I try so hard to say her name right. I want to call her Rosmeen, and it's Rosmeen. Since she's been sitting there very patiently while Tony and I have been spouting off, we're going to give her a chance to speak on the whole pricing issue and maybe her own personal experiences that she's had.
Sure. So I'm going to take it in two ways, one from the physician advocate side and one from a patient side as well. Physicians do not get paid for fairly for everything that they put in, the work that they put in.
Correct.
Because usually,
yes.
especially when you're dealing with specialists, yes, they do, you know, high dollar procedures and things like that and everything, but they have to jump through so many hoops to get prior authorizations, especially if they have Medicare Advantage population. We have a cardiologist and a neurologist. They have 1.5 people to do prior authorization. So one full-time and one part-time. So that's, you know, that's a lot of money just going in there. And of course, a lot of times And then it's not just, you know, calling or logging into a portal and getting that authorization number. You have to send in clinicals. You have to wait for the procedure to be scheduled. There's just so much involved, so much paperwork involved just to get one procedure covered. So yes. That's one thing that I feel is driving up the cost for sure, you know, because when we talk about all the variables, right, as to what is driving up the healthcare costs, you know, there's your prescriptions and all of that. But then this is a big chunk right here. This is a really big piece, you know, with prior authorizations. And then you mm-hmm. also have to do, you know, and then there's still a chance for that procedure to get denied even after the claim is filed. And then you have to go do the appeals right. and the peer-to-peer yeah. and, you know, that takes a lot of time also. So a clean claim that could get paid within 7 days, now it's taking up to 45 days to get that paid.
Right.
So that $1,000 procedure that you did, I mean, when you get paid after $45, how much did you really get of that $1,000, right? So that's where I come in for the physician advocacy, where, you know, I train the office staff where they do their job right the first time, you know, because of the fact that, you know, if somebody drops the ball and doesn't get the prior authorization or doesn't do their due diligence, the physician is losing out on that money at the back end. So we try to do a lot of that education at the front end. Another thing that I will tell you, Tony, like you, as you mentioned, the direct primary care model, right? I really like that. I have a client right now who is who's doing hybrid. He's primary care, so he's doing direct primary care, and he's on some payer, some insurances as well. The reason that it's not really catching fire, so to speak, I feel, is this because the patients see their health insurance as a security blanket. Yes. You know, it's a security blanket for them. It's like, if I don't have health insurance, what's going to happen? Like Stacey, what you said, right? The years that you didn't have health insurance is the years that you needed that most, right?
Right.
But then they're not educated enough in this area where they don't know that their deductibles and all of that stuff is they're going to end up paying even more, you know, mm-hmm. if not less. So direct primary care is a little bit scary for the patients. And another thing I want to mention here is the out of sight, out of mind syndrome for patients. Okay. As long as their insurance is covering something, they don't care.
Yes.
That's what I've seen.
Yeah.
You know, as long as, and if they do get that bill for that deductible for that co-insurance or copay, why am I getting this bill? Why am I supposed to, what am I supposed to do with this? Why I'm paying so much for my insurance? Well, this is the, and then you have to go on this whole like script. You have to explain to them that you signed a contract with your insurance. You signed the doctor signed the contract with the insurance.
Yeah.
This is how it works. It's like, we really have fun with that. But the thing is that if the insurance has paid for something, they're not going to dispute it because they've paid into that. They've paid their premium. Right. They're paying all of that. So the insurance is covering it. So even if it's a bill that like a level 5, they're not going to question it because right. the insurance has taken care of it. But if they have to pay that out of pocket, they will raise that. Okay. Why am I getting this bill? So there's just a few things I feel there's just disconnect. The direct primary care model can work beautifully, and it'll save the government a lot of money, but there's also people are just not ready for that just yet. I don't know what the solution is. I'm just kind of telling you guys that this is what I see, and this is what I deal with on a day-to-day basis.
That brings us to the end of part 2 of the discussion about the price we pay, what broke American healthcare, and how to fix it. Thank you, Rosemean and Tony, for sharing your thoughts on this important topic. To all of my listeners, again, if you have not already done so, I highly recommend you pick up a copy of Dr. McCary's book. It truly is a must read. And if you've already read the book, I would love to hear your thoughts. Please feel free to send an email to podcast@radrx.com. That's podcast@radrx.com. Or you can also share your thoughts with me on LinkedIn. As always, I want to thank all of my listeners. If you are loving the podcast and listen on Apple, please take a moment to give the podcast a 5-star rating and also leave a review. And as always, please share the podcast with your friends and colleagues. If you have feedback you'd like to share on an episode, or if you have a topic suggestion, please send an email to podcast@radrx.com. Thanks again for tuning in, and have an amazing week.
Thank you for listening to Who Cares What Stacy Says? You can connect with Stacy on social media. You can find her business page for RadRx on Facebook, and you can connect with her personally on LinkedIn. Don't forget to check out the online training courses offered by RadRx, Cracking the IR Code, Mastering Interventional Radiology and Cardiology Online Training, or Cracking the Diagnostic Radiology Code Online Training. Thanks again for tuning in to Who Cares What Stacy Says? A podcast providing insights and advice on how to take your medical coding career to the next level.